Welcome back to our second presentation for Chapter 17, Financial Ratio Analysis. And in this presentation, we're going to forge some new ground. It was all basically review with a little bit of good stuff, extra stuff in the first presentation. Well, now we're going to take a look at ratios and analyses that we haven't done yet. And we start on slide number 20 with the profitability ratios. Now, you're going to need the financial statements for Walgreens, okay, because we're going to do some calculations for, we're going to do them right now for Walgreens. The profitability ratios are financial ratios that measure a firm's returns by relating profits to sales, assets, or equity. The net profit margin, the gross margin, the operating margin, the return on assets, and return on equity. Profitability ratios allow one to measure the ability of a firm to earn an adequate return on sales, total assets, and invested capital. Slide number 21. The net profit margin, widely reported statistic, also called the after-tax profit margin. The rate of profit being earned from earnings after expenses and taxes. So what you need to do is you need to take a look at this is from the income statement. The income statement for Walgreens, and find the net income and find the total revenue. Okay? Now, this is where the accountants have a little bit of leg up on the rest of us, because sometimes people use different terms for the same thing, right? Total revenue, total sales. So if you downloaded the statements from the website, you'll see that I've written in the different names that are used. But if you went right to Yahoo or Bloomberg and downloaded them, they might not be exactly the same. Net income is often called the bottom line, right? The bottom line. And total revenue is often called the top line. Interesting. And the top line revenue, meaning what did we bring through the door in terms of dollars, but then you had to pay for all the things you sold, and you had to pay for the rent and the salaries for people and the interest income and taxes and all this other stuff. So what's left over, folks? That's the bottom line. Cute, huh? And the higher the better. Of course, it varies greatly from industry to industry and within individual companies. So if you do the calculation for Walgreens, do you find the total revenue? Right, I saw 72,184,000. Now, those are numbers that you have to multiply by 1,000. So Walgreens last year pulled in $72 billion, $184 million. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's a big company. It's got stores all over the country, and that's the top line. The bottom line was $2,714,000,000, or 2,714. You can just get rid of the last three zeros in both cases. You divide the bottom line net income, 2,714, divided by 72,184, the top line revenue, and you get 3.76%. Is that good? I don't know. Maybe it is. I don't know. You don't know without looking at their competitors. So who are Walgreens' competitors, huh? Well, CVS, right? Longs. And the other one, Rite Aid, the basket case, which amazes me that they're still in business. One of our favorite activities on a Saturday night, my wife and I love to go watch all the people at Rite Aid in Ocean Beach. It's a very interesting parade of offbeat, colorful characters. And so, is 3.76. It doesn't sound like a lot, does it? Well, it makes sense. A company that sells a lot of stuff every day with a very small markup would have a smaller net profit margin. But don't be sad, folks. They might make a few pennies on every gallon of milk, every gallon of formula, all the Pampers they sell, and all the other things that the drugs. Well, they make a lot of money off the drugs, depending. But they sell that milk every day, right? They sell you milk every few days. They sell you diapers every few days. You got it. So yeah, right. Now, if you go to Yahoo and look up the net profit margin on the key statistics page, you'll see that they're reporting 3.68%. Well, you know, how come that's different? Well, it's not that different, but what's going on? You'll see next to some of these statistics, TTM, huh? Trailing 12 months. Right. We are looking at their annual statements. Well, they came out last, it's what, August? This is last year. They come out a couple months afterwards, but this is for the previous year. But since then, they've come out with quarterly reports, and that was part of your Chapter 5 assignment. So trailing 12 months says, look at the last 12 months of the recent activity. Don't look at the year's activity. And you can do that if you want to. You want to print out the quarterly ones and look at that, and go right ahead. Okay, so you got the idea? They're all exactly like this, folks. Slide number 22, the gross margin. It's the rate of profit being earned from the gross profit. What's the gross profit? Well, if you look at the income statement, you'll see that underneath the total revenue is cost of goods sold, or it goes by various names. In other words, Walgreens sold an awful lot of Pampers, but they had to buy the Pampers from Procter & Gamble. They sold an awful lot of drugs from Merck and Pfizer and Eli Lilly and Bristol Myers Squibb, but they had to buy those. So how much did it cost them? Right? They bought them for less than they sold them to you. And that is the gross profit. Total revenue minus the cost of goods sold, or the cost of whatever it is sometimes. It goes by various names. And so we find what's the gross profit? $20,490,000,000. I got my cheat sheet right in front of me. It makes me look smart. Right? $20,492,000,000. So you take the gross margin divided by the total revenue, and you get 23.39%. And again, the higher the better. And it varies greatly from industry to industry. So we have to go back and look at CVS, and we have to go back and look at Rite Aid. And wait a minute. Are they the only competitors to Walgreens? Right. Yes. Walmart and Costco and Target and even some of the grocery stores have been getting more and more into the drug business, too. So we kind of got to look at them, too, don't we? Right. Exactly. Slide number 23, the operating margin. Well, go down the income statement and you'll see that operating income, right, they take out the more expenses, don't they? They take out more expenses. And what are those operating expenses? Well, normally the biggest one is SG&A. Huh? That's one of the things I asked you to look up when you were doing your earnings call. Why? Because the CEOs and the financial officers and the people giving the presentations, just they don't say selling, general, and administrative. They just say SG&A, and people go, what's that? And you'll notice that that's the major component of the operating expenses for Walgreens. In other words, the rent, the salaries, all that other stuff. And for them, that was what, $16,561,000,000. So our operating income is $4,365,000,000. You see? So we started with the top line, top revenue. Then we reduced that by the cost of goods sold, cost of revenue, and that was our gross profit. and then we reduce that by our operating expenses, and now we're down to operating income. So we divide operating income of $4,365,000,000, divided by the total revenue, same, that's the same number, right, the total sales or whatever, 72,184, and we get 6.05. And yep, you guessed it, the higher the better. It varies greatly from industry to industry, so when you are looking at a specific company, we always need to look at its competitors within the industry. When we find a company that is atypical of its competitors in an industry, it is a signal that we have more investigative work to do. So just as we saw in the previous presentation, right? If all of a sudden, for some reason, Walgreens' operating margin or gross margin, net profit margin were way out of line with CVS or Rite Aid, then we would want to know why. We would want to delve deeper. And it may be a good sign. It may not be a good sign, or it may be just an aberration for a quarter or a year. All right, let's continue. The next two are very popular, the return on assets, and on the next slide, return on equity. A return on assets measures how profitable a company is relative to its total assets. So now you're going to need to take a look at the balance sheet. The net income was the bottom line. Remember the bottom line number? What did we have left over after we paid all our expenses? And we're going to compare that to the total assets on the balance sheet. So you need to take a look at the balance sheet also. The return on assets looks at the amount of resources a company needs to support operations. It reveals how effective the company is in generating profits from the assets it has available. And, of course, the higher the better. So our net income, if we remember, was $2,714,000,000, and our total assets for Walgreens are $27,474,000,000. So dividing the net income divided by the total assets gives us 9.89%, which sounds pretty good, and it is pretty good. Walgreens is a very well-run company, but remember, we've got to go look at our right, you know that already. Good. The next one is another very popular statistic, the return on equity, the return on investment, it's sometimes called. It's a measure of the overall profitability of a company in relation to the shareholders' equity. So we take that same net income, that same bottom line number, and we divide that by the total stockholders' equity. And again, that's on the balance sheet. So you need the net income from the income statement. You need the total stockholders' equity from the balance sheet. Excuse me. Because return on equity uses stockholders' equity instead of total assets for the denominator, return on equity is sensitive to the amount of debt a company is carrying. Specifically, if a company carries a great amount of debt, return on equity will be much larger than return on assets. And the saying you hear people say is, you're using other people's money to make your money. And some investors think this is great. You know, others are worried about the possible negative consequences of too much debt. And I'm with them. You know, two schools of thought. And we'll discuss leverage later on, but this is the idea. If you're carrying a lot of debt, you're basically using somebody else's money to make your money. So we take a look at the net income, which is, again, $2,714,000,000, and we go on the balance sheet and look for total stockholder equity, and we find that it's $14,847,000,000. Are you finding these? Pause the presentation if you're not. Go look at them. And we divide those, and we get 18.28%. Sounds good, doesn't it? Well, check out and look at their competitors and see how they're doing in relation to their competitors. And that's pretty good. Yeah, they're a well-run company. Slide number 26. So those are the profitability ratios. Now, the liquidity ratios. And we know liquidity, right? That means, do we have enough cash on hand, right? Financial ratios concerned with a firm's ability to meet its day-to-day operating expenses and satisfy its short-term obligations as they come due, right? So it's important, folks. It's very important to be able to pay your bills on time, including your taxes, including your salaries, and you want to pay Procter & Gamble for the Pampers and Merck for the drug. Right, exactly. So there are two ratios that are very important, and the third number is actually not really a ratio. So it's a little, here's our little fly in the ointment. All these others are ratios, but this one is not. The current ratio, current assets to current liabilities, the net working capital is really the current ratio, as we'll see, in absolute dollar terms. It's not really a ratio. And then the acid test ratio. Acid test, boy, doesn't that sound exciting? Quick ratio. We use data from the balance sheet, so take a look at the balance sheet. Let's go to slide number 27. Now, the current ratio, one of the more popular financial measures, and as we said, we take the current assets and we divide them by the current liabilities. It's a very good indicator of how stable a company is. Anything over one is considered acceptable. Why? Because you have sufficient assets, short-term, current, is what the accountants use. We usually use short-term. We have sufficient short-term assets, and we have more than our current liabilities, our short-term liabilities, so we can pay our debts. If your current assets equal or exceed your current liabilities, you should be able to satisfy your short-term obligations without any problem, and obviously the greater the number, the better. But then you get into situations like Microsoft or Apple where the current ratio is, 50 or 100 or whatever. It's just ridiculous. But let's take a look at Walgreens. And so you have to go to the balance sheet. Can you find current assets? Total current assets is what it says on the Yahoo one. Did you find that? Right? 12,322. You see that? In other words, Walgreens has on hand short-term assets, current assets, of $12,322,000,000. And then go down a little bit further on the balance sheet, and you'll find their current liabilities, or total current liabilities, as it says on the balance sheet here, are $8,083,000,000. So if you divide the assets, $12,322, divided by $8,083, you wind up with 1.5. Yes, Walgreens can pay its current liabilities very, very easily, yes. So, and we would look at CVS and Rite Aid and the like. Now, slide 28. Here's the one weirdo. It's not really a ratio. It's the net working capital. And what we do is we take the current assets and subtract the current liabilities. So it's the absolute dollar measure of liquidity. So let's read the bottom. Net working capital is the current ratio in dollar terms. If the current ratio is greater than 1.0, then net working capital will be positive. Well, duh, that means your current assets are greater than your current liabilities, right? So the number will be positive. If the current ratio is less than 1, then the net working capital will be negative, right? Obviously, the higher the net working capital, the better. This statistic is less popular than the current ratio, and it's really not a ratio, but is often discussed when discussing the current ratio and other liquidity ratios. Because the ratio is simply a relationship, whereas the net working capital says how much do we have on hand? You understand how many dollars do we have on hand? If we subtracted all our current liabilities, what will we have left over in current assets? Now, the next one, boy, doesn't this sound exciting, the acid test ratio, or sometimes called the quick ratio. Well, what it is, it's the current ratio, but we remove the inventory. So it's a more stringent version of the current ratio. You look at the balance sheet and you take all the current assets without the inventory. So there's two different ways you calculate it. You can calculate it the way we have here on the slide, where you take the cash plus the accounts receivable plus the short-term investments plus any other current assets, and you come up with a number. Or you could just take the total current assets and subtract the inventory. Either way, folks. And I find that number is $4,278,000,000. Now make sure I did it right, folks. I used a spreadsheet. because Walgreens has over $8 billion in inventory. Well, that makes sense. The stores are stuck to the shelves or stuck to the ceiling. And why? Why would you exclude the inventory? Well, let's read at the bottom. Unlike the current ratio, the acid test ratio excludes inventory. This ratio measures the ability of the company to meet its short-term obligations even if its current inventory becomes obsolete or undesirable or whatever, and hence difficult or impossible to be turned into cash. Anything greater than one is considered adequate, but in the case of Walgreens, folks, is their inventory going to become obsolete or undesirable? Well, maybe a few of the drugs have a lifespan, right? They have to be sold and used by a certain date, but usually that's plenty of time in the future. But the rest of the inventory is not going to go bad. I mean, maybe the milk has to be replaced every once in a while, but no. Walgreens doesn't have to worry too much about this. And hence, you see that their current ratio, their acid test ratio is only 0.5. And are analysts and investors concerned? No. Now, what if it were a computer company or the Lucent Technologies building telephone equipment and internet equipment? Right. Those companies really have to worry about carrying a whole lot of inventory because the products become obsolete quickly. And Dell Computers was one of the pioneers in really reducing their inventory. They never had any. Huh? How can you do that? Yes, they would not build to inventory. They would develop their products, and then they would wait for people. Of course, they have to market them, but they would wait for people to bring the orders to them. Then they would create it. It was called just-in-time. It still is called just-in-time. And they would order the parts just-in-time. And companies such as FedEx and UPS and the other carriers made it much easier for them because they could deliver goods much faster. Yeah. And so if you're a computer company, boy, you would love to not have any inventory whatsoever because 6 months from now, those computers are, oh my goodness, they're old. But the old ones worked. The new ones with Windows 7, they don't work. Anyway, I digress. So, you understand the acid test ratio? Some companies, very important. Other companies, we're not worried about the inventory becoming undesirable or obsolete. Slide number 30. Now, let's take a look at the activity ratios. Benjamin Graham was a big fan of the activity ratios. When you read the Intelligent Investor and Security Analysis, he'll point these puppies out quite a bit, and along with the leverage and the liquidity ratios too. So the activity ratio are financial ratios that are used to measure how well a firm is managing its assets, the accounts receivable turnover, the inventory turnover, the total asset turnover. These ratios use data from the balance sheet and the income statement. Activity ratios measure a firm's ability to convert different accounts within their balance sheets into cash or sales. Companies will try to turn their production into cash or sales as fast as possible because this will generally lead to higher revenues. In other words, you don't want stuff sitting around, right? Slide number 31. Accounts receivable turnover. This is a measure of how accounts receivable are managed. So we use the top line revenue, the top line number from the income statement, total revenue, total sales, we use that number and we divide it by accounts receivable. So total revenue, again, was $72,184. Accounts receivable, which is on the balance sheet, was $2,497,000,000. So that's, you divide total revenue divided by accounts receivable, and that's 28.9. What does that mean? Well, that means they turn over their accounts receivable 29 times every year, or about 2 weeks, right? Every 2 weeks, right? Because there's 52 weeks in a year, and 29 is actually a little bit higher than that, so more than that. They're doing pretty good. The higher the number, the better. It indicates the return a company is getting from its investment in accounts receivable. By maintaining accounts receivable, firms are indirectly extending interest-free loans to their clients. A high ratio implies that the company operates either on a cash basis or is extension of a credit and collection of accounts receivable is efficient, such as Walgreens. So, you know, they get the money in, they get it out. They don't have these people who are waiting 60 days or 90 days or 120 days. A low ratio implies that the company should reassess its credit policy in order to ensure the timely collection of imparted credit, not earning interest for the firm, or that just may be the way the industry operates. If you ever worked with the Defense Department, my understanding is they've gotten better, but oh my goodness, they take forever to pay. 6 months is quick, folks. They might take up to a year. Whoa, we're the government, we're gonna pay you, don't worry, but we're just getting around to it, relax. My understanding is it's much quicker now, especially for smaller firms, because smaller firms were dying. You know, we'd done the work for the Navy or whoever, and now they haven't paid us for 90 days, 120 days, 180 days. We're in trouble. And so my understanding is they've gotten better. Make sense? Yeah, cool. Okay, slide number 32. Inventory turnover. A measure of how the inventory is managed. So it's the same idea, right? You take the total revenue and you divide it by the inventory. The higher the number, the less time an item spends in inventory, and the better the return the company is able to earn from funds tied up in inventory. As with all ratios, this ratio must be compared against industry averages. Do you remember that? Yeah, yeah. A low turnover implies poor sales and therefore excess inventory. A high ratio implies either strong sales or possibly ineffective inventory buying and maintenance. You don't have enough stock on hand. High inventory levels are unhealthy because they represent an investment with a rate of return of zero. And it also opens the company up to trouble in the case of falling prices or obsolete products. So dealerships of cars, right, they don't really want to have a lot of cars on the lot. Well, of course they do because it brings in more buyers, but that means they're sitting on money that they're, you know, they have to finance these things before the customer comes and buys them. So, yeah, it's a problem. But look at Walgreens. They have asked inventory of, what is it, $8 billion, right, $8.44 billion, and you divide that into the total revenue, and you wind up with almost 8.9749. What does that mean? Every year, they will run through that inventory 9 times. So you walk into a Walgreens and come back in 6 weeks, everything in the store has been sold. They've gone through the inventory in about 5-6 weeks, right? 9 times a year. There's 12 months in a year. You think it's all the same because you don't, you know, but you're not stocking the shelves every day and you're not seeing the stuff fly off the shelves. So that's pretty good. 9 times a year. And again, is Walgreens inventory going to go obsolete? No, it's not. Slide number 33. The last financial activity ratio is the total asset turnover. It's a measure of how total assets are managed. You take the total revenue from the income statement, you divide it by the total assets. The total asset turnover ratio measures the firm's efficiency at using its assets to support sales and revenue. The higher the number, the better. Companies with low profit margins tend to have high asset turnover. They sell an awful lot of diapers at Walgreens. Those with high profit margins, such as the car dealerships, have low asset turnover. Right? It seems like they're selling a lot of cars, but they're not selling anywhere near as many cars as Walgreens is selling formula, baby formula. So what did we find? We had total assets, where are they? $27,454,000,000, and you divide that into the total revenue, 72,184, and we get 2.629 or so. And is that good? Is that bad? I don't know. Take a look at their competitors and see how they stack up. The last excuse me, the last group are the leverage ratios. And there's that word again, leverage. Let's read the bottom first. Debt is often referred to as leveraged. And we'll come back to this idea later on, over and over. The idea is that you are using other people's money to make your money. Real estate investors live and die with leverage. You are using the borrowed money as a lever to increase your earnings. Does that make sense? You understand the analogy there or the metaphor? When one firm buys another firm using borrowed money, it is often referred to as a leveraged buyout. So the leverage ratios are financial ratios that are used to measure the amount of debt being used to support operations and the ability of the firm to service its debt. So we have the debt-to-equity ratio, the number of times interest earned, very popular with Benjamin Graham, the total debt to total assets, and we use the balance sheet and the income statement. Or. Slide number 35, the debt-to-equity ratio. Well, this should look familiar to some of you in the financial planning class, because we do the same thing for individuals. It's a measure of a company's financial leverage, calculated by dividing long-term debt by shareholders' equity. It indicates what proportion of equity and debt the company is using to finance its assets. So you take the long-term debt. Now, where is that? That's on the balance sheet. Divide that by the total stockholder equity. That's on the balance sheet. A higher debt-to-equity ratio generally means that a company has been aggressive in financing its growth with debt. This can result in lower earnings as a result of the additional interest expense, and sometimes investors will only use interest-bearing long-term debt instead of the total liabilities. Now, in my humble opinion, the lower the better. Why? Because I'm debt-averse. It's a great feeling, folks, when you don't have these debt payments coming due. And it's true for individuals, and it's true for corporations. But there are other people who say, no, I don't understand. We're doing good things with that money we've borrowed. So it's good. And it's good to have a lot of debt. So there are two schools of thought. And what I love about Walmart, if you look at their long-term debt, it's, for a company of this size, $2.396 billion for a company of their size, that's very low, right? So you divide that long-term debt into the stockholders' equity of $14,847, and you get a debt-to-equity ratio of 16.14%. Very, very manageable. Anything between 30 and 50% is usually very manageable for a company. So for many years, Walgreens had no debt. They just didn't believe in it. And then the interest rates got so low, they decided, hey, we could do some growth by borrowing some serious change and getting a whole bunch of new stores up and running. So it's still low compared to the industry as a whole. So you got to go look at the competitors and find out. Slide number 36, times interest earned. Huh? Well, this is the number of times per year you will earn your interest. That's exactly what it means. It's the measure of the ability of the company to meet its fixed interest payments. Because remember, you got to pay your debt payments or you get hauled into bankruptcy court. You take the earnings before interest and taxes and divide them by the interest expense. So we've got to go look at the income statement, find earnings before interest and taxes, and I find $4,365,000,000. Make sure I got it right. And you need to divide that by the interest expense, which is, folks, it's nothing, right? An interest expense is for a company this size, $71 million. It's nothing. That's because interest rates are dirt cheap right now. And so you find, you divide the earnings before interest and taxes, divide that by the interest expense, $4,365,000,000 divided by $71 million, and you get 61.48, 61.5. In other words, they earn their interest 61 times a year, every 5 days. every 5 days or so, they, 6 days, 5.5 days, Walgreens earns its interest. So is there any danger of Walgreens being hauled into bankruptcy court because they can't pay their debt? Right. No. It ain't gonna happen. Company after my own heart, folks. My favorite saying, those of you in the financial planning class know, make love, not loans. Slide number 37. Total debt to total assets. This is a measure of how much of a company's total assets have been financed by debt. And so we take the total liabilities from the balance sheet and divide that by the total assets. Total debt to total assets includes both short-term and long-term debt. If it varies substantially from the debt-to-equity ratio, the company may be relying heavily on short-term debt. A heavy reliance on short-term debt can, but not necessarily does, denote more risk. Think of it as a person using their credit cards to finance operations. Yeah, short-term debt is usually a bad sign. Nowadays, with short-term debt being essentially zero, look at those corporate paper investments we looked at in Chapter 1, but we don't know how long that's going to last. It could last a lot longer. We don't know. But if you do the calculation, total liabilities, which are, what are they? $12,607,000,000, and divide that by the total assets of $27,454,000,000, you get 45.92, which is considered fine. Anything less than 0.5 is considered fine. Even higher. It's a lot higher for some companies. So what do you think, folks? Not that hard, right? This stuff is not that hard. That is our discussion of financial statements and ratio analysis. So now you have a new tool to in your armory. So as you're going through the cash flow, discounted cash flow, dividend discount models, the price ratio models, you can now throw in the mixed, into the mix, these ratios. And again, as we said, after all the calculations and all the numbers are floating around, throw them all the way and ask yourself, would I really want to invest in a company like Walgreens or CVS or Rite Aid? Next stop, next week, next chapter, we start looking at silliness, folks, and psychology and behavior and efficiencies with chapter 7. We've done the heavy lifting with stocks. Now we're going to do some of the lighter fare. See you in the next chapter.